tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step, day by day, day by day, day, by day. I'm on the round to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Studies Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation. So please take a moment to get situated. Turn off all devices that make noise or that might will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away. And ask God to help you stay focused on the steps of tonight. Is everybody ready? Start the two-minute meditation. Like to lead to join me in the fog light. If you don't know the fog light prayer, it's right here on the sign, or there's cards in the seats. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, for those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. There is a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree, and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Mike to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is. Mike.
My name's Mike. I'm an alcoholic. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of a sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among a rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experience are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments and cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting. Set your phones to airplane meeting mode or just turn them off. This is Tom's 10th week with us. Been on this journey 9 weeks before this, and it's been exciting every week. I love listening to him. I'm listening to him at the meeting and then going home listening to him on podcast again. I don't know why. It was a little bit crazy, but you got a good message. So with that, everybody help me welcome Tom.
This says something different than the one I was telling you about. My name's Tom. I'm an alcoholic. You know, on my second anniversary, the guy gave me a ball cap, and he says, "Here, Tom, I think you need to start wearing that," you know, and I opened it up, and I saw right away on the front of it, it said, "A legend in my own mind." He said, "That's what you are. That's what you need, you know. You need that hat." I don't know why I was thinking about it. I never know what the heck I'm going to talk about, really. I know I usually, you know, I'm not the big preparation kind of guy, although I do kind of the same things all the time. I brought some handouts tonight, you know, that they mean a lot to me, and so I hope they mean something to you. And usually I do nothing but maybe read the step. Read the big book a little bit. But God, you know, always seems to stick something in my head. You know, that's the way I look at it, you know, is that God sticks something in my head. And I don't know why after we meditated, you know, this thought came to me of a story. And so there must be a reason. That's the way I look at things, is there must be a reason why I should tell you this story. Otherwise, why in the hell did I think about it? Because I hadn't thought about it in a long time. I think that you know, I've shared with you, and that, you know, I know there's a lot of people that have been here, you know, through most of this, and you know, for those of you who haven't, you know, if you don't know anything about me, I'll tell you this, you know, I had a hard time getting sober, and spent years going in and out, and the progression of my alcoholism just got worse, and I spent a lot of time in jail. Spent a lot of time in the stockade. You know. That's why I have a friend who passed. I was his grand sponsor. His sponsor passed this past year, and he was my longest sponsee. I sponsored him almost 30 years. And this fella's name was Jerry Henderson, and he was a character. Jerry, he was the nicest, most mild-mannered guy you ever want to meet. You would never think that he used to rob banks. And you would never think that, you know. Not in a million years. You would think maybe he was a priest or something, you know, but you wouldn't think that he was a bank robber. No, but he was. And when he went to work for the sheriff of Palm Beach County, and in prior to the drug farm that they started out in Belgrade, they used to have a drug block that my old mentor, Dennis O, first really started. So he says, you know, Tom, you spent a lot of time in that stockade out there, the old stockade. He said, why don't you come out and talk to these guys? And so I said, okay. So I went out there, and I said, well, you know, how long do you want me to talk to these guys? And he said, well, these guys ain't going nowhere. And after 2 hours, he says, I think that's enough now, Tom. So I don't have any trouble talking when I have trouble doing it, shutting up. But I don't know what I'm telling you. The only reason I'm telling you that is because, you know, like I shared before, I wasn't too crazy about cops. You know, like I shared before, I mean, one of my favorite things to do would be, I'd do stuff in blackouts. And I didn't even have to be in a blackout. I could just be drunk as hell. And pull the fire alarm on the street and wait for the cops to come. And the cops would say, you know, who pulled that fire alarm? And I'd spit in his face and say, I did. What are you going to do about it? So it wasn't crazy for cops, you know. And I took some beatings in the jailhouse. Where I come from, they beat you in them old days. You know, you didn't fight with cops. Well, when they got you down to the jailhouse, they'd all work you. They would teach you a lesson about fighting. So I never cared much for cops, but on my second to last drunk, really, I had been in the central house, and just like all the times before, I was telling the people as I was sitting there that I was done. You know, I'd had a lot of stuff that was happening to me. I didn't want to drink anymore. I was finished with that. And I meant it when I said that. I really believed it. And, of course, just like a lot of other times, I got up from there. I walked down the street. I heard music coming out of a joint. And I said, well, I'm just going in here to listen to music, you know, and drink some Coke. Sit down at the bar and look at myself in the mirror, because I love to look at myself in the mirror, and start drinking Coke, you know. And then I'd look up at the clock on the wall, and I'd get this idea, this great idea. My friend Jerry, he used to always, the same guy I'm talking about, used to always talk about my great ideas. And I got this great idea that I'll bet you if I keep my eye on that clock, I'll make myself just drink for an hour. And I won't go in a blackout. And I won't wake up in a jail cell. And I won't wake up in the weeds. And it'll be different this time. Do you know how insane that is? Because, you know, essentially, I've been telling myself that same stuff for years. It's going to be different. And that's exactly where I wound up. I come out of the blackout, and I was in the weeds. I was up in Boynton Beach, up on Federal Highway. And there's a little restaurant, you know, by there called Joal's. It used to be there. It was an early morning breakfast place and lunch, you know. And now across from there was a park in the Intercoastal. And they were building a building. And I, even though I came out of the weeds, you know, and I was coming to, I was still lit because I had so much booze in me. And I'm fishing around. I got a jean jacket on. It's wintertime. And I find a joint stuck in there, and I huff the joint, you know. Now I'm feeling cocky. And they're building this building, and a pile of H clamps. You know, I work construction, so anybody who works construction knows what. They don't use them so much anymore, but they were for tie beams, you know, on top of the block wall. They're a steel clamp that you can put right down over the plywood. And a pile of them there, and I seen the big picture window in this thing, so I grabbed one of them, and I flung it through that picture window and busted it. And a guy just happened to be coming out of Joal's. It was like 6 in the morning. And he comes running up to me, and he says, "What in the hell do you think you're doing? I'm a cop in Ocean Ridge, and I'm going to call the Boynton PD, you know." And I grabbed one of those H clamps, and I said, "Yeah, and I'm going to knock your head off," or some such thing, you know. And he ran back in Joal's. And I turned, and I looked at the seawall, and I said, "I'll just swim across the Intercoastal to out of their jurisdiction." And I made it to the seawall, and they were on me, you know, like three dogs. Cuffed me, hauled me down to the Boynton holding cell to take me to gun club. What really made me angry was they had put attempted burglary charges on me, and I never even stepped off the sidewalk. I mean, vandalism, yeah, but attempted burglary? It wasn't too long after that I went to the VA hospital. And my last drunk, my mother took me to Tampa in the VA hospital. And we had to come back the next morning. I couldn't get in there that day. But what they really did was they said, "You know what, we got a 6-week waiting list. And you'll have to go back home to Palm Beach County and wait 6 weeks before we can take you in this alcoholism treatment program. But you see, I'm a very slick guy." I said, "Oh, no, I want to talk to the head psychologist." "Well, what do you want to talk to him?" I said, "That's none of your business. That's between me and him." And, of course, I told him that I'd been trying to grease myself. And so he called right up to the AA ward and said, "I'm sending a guy up there." And on my way out, I showed this guy what his IQ was. But I had to come back the next morning. So my mother, my poor old mother, she was a wonderful woman. She used to come down on Skid Row looking for me, dragging me home, you know, getting me sobered up. And I'd cry and carry on, you know, about how sorry I was, you know, and I'd never do it again. And as soon as her back was turning, I felt good. I was gone again. She had took me over there, and I waited for her to go to sleep, and I snuck the money out of her purse. And I'd already spotted a bar. It was a good thing. I somehow I got back in that hotel room that night, or I might not be here right now. But a couple of years had gone down the road, and I'm sitting in the old Central House, the old American Legion Central House, and I have a friend. He's a character. He's gone now, too. His name was Dick Manette. He didn't like cops either. He was an old dope dealer and outlaw, you know, from Barstow. You know, and he didn't care much for the police either. And they brought all the guys in from the druggy buggy, you know. And they're all lining up on the table across from us. And I look across the table, the meeting starts, and I noticed this one guy. He looks real familiar to me. And I can't figure out where do I know this guy from? Finally, about halfway through the meeting, it comes to me, he's that cop. And there he is, off of the druggy buggy, sitting across the table from me. And I turn to Dick Manette, and I tell him the story. And he says, well, you know what you need to do? And I said, what's that? And he said, you need to get next to him, become his sponsor, and jack him around. I says, I can't do that. He just laughed, you know. You see, because what this is all about is changing the guy that brought me in here. And that's not what I wanted Alcoholics Anonymous to be about. I never wanted it to be about having to have to change my character. You know, I liked hanging, you know, when we talked about, you know, our shortcomings and stuff, there's stuff that I like to hang on to about that. And besides that, you know, I'm not really that good at looking at myself. Because like my sponsor used to say to me, it's hard to see the picture when you're in the frame. It's why I always say that I'm three people. I'm the person that I think I am. I'm the person that I want you to think I am. And then I'm the person that I really am. And that's what doing an inventory is all about. It's all about me knowing who the person is that I really am. I was a terrible liar. And the person that I lied to the most was me. I lied to me my whole life. Because I created the character that I was. I raised him up from the ground. I built that character. I built him. And I built a wall around him 4 foot thick. And I spent my whole life patching every crack in that wall. Because I couldn't have you see me. I couldn't have that. I had to pretend. Ever heard that old song, The Great Pretender? My friend Dion, he knows that song good. That's who I was, The Great Pretender. I could pretend to be anything. You know, and I can't do that if I'm going to stay sober. And if I won't do an inventory, and you know, I've shared this when we worked on the four step. You know, I lost more guys who wouldn't persevere through the four step. That was the term that was used by my sponsor constantly drummed into me through my work in the four step, persevere, persevere, persevere. I must persevere in this program. An old man that used to go to Central Hospital, well, still goes. He's still alive. God bless him. I learned a long time ago, I used to listen to him. He used to pound on the table, pound on it. And he'd pound on that table and he'd say, I got to practice, 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 practice my program. Let me tell you something. The master doesn't become a master without practicing every day. And he doesn't remain a master without practicing every day. When he stops practicing this program every day, the first ones to see him start to slip are his family. Because they're the ones that are closest to him. And then his acquaintances and friends. And the public. And he's always the last one to figure it out. But his problem is, like I've lost a lot of other guys, they refuse to take a daily inventory. They see no need in it. They're okay. It's like that little boy whistling in the dark. Everything's fine here. Like that farmer who come out of the cellar. What's the problem here, Ma? Everything's fine. You know? I don't see no problem here. That's what we want to do. We want to think that's a pain in the butt, right? We have entered into the world of spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Why do we discuss it? Why do we need to discuss? Why did we have to discuss it in the fifth step? Because the virtue that I need the most is humility. Humility is what I lack in. I lack tremendously in humility. Because I'm an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. That's the truth about me. That's the person who is who I really am. And so I fall prey to my shortcomings. I fall prey to my shortcomings. They climb up on me. And if I don't stay on top of this, I'm in big trouble. I'm in big trouble. Because this disease can climb up on me quick. So I need to practice. Continue to watch for these crop up. We ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to somebody we could help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. That's where we get that from. Love and tolerance. We heard that in meetings, I'm sure, is our code. It's right out of the big book. What we don't hear so often in meetings anymore is what used to be said in meetings all the time. That we need to be hard on ourselves and tolerant of others. That does not mean that I beat myself up. That's not what that's about. Maybe we worried about that. We had too many therapists tell us, you know, to be nice to ourselves. That we need to be soft on ourselves. Well, I don't know about you, but this alcoholic doesn't work real well that way. See? You see, I'm a believer in what it says in this book, that we alcoholics are undisciplined people. So we allow God to discipline us. Not that God's testing me. You know, we're going to talk tonight a little bit more on this belief that God's testing you. Life tests you. My God gives me strength. He doesn't test me. Life tests me. And we've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. Do you know how hard that is for me? Do you know how hard it is? Listen, let me tell you something. God disciplines. Now, how did God discipline me? Well, I'll tell you how. 5 years sober, he made me a union official. See? See, God, my God doesn't change things for me, okay? My God doesn't split the Red Sea or turn, you know, a few fish into baskets full or a few loaves of bread into basketfuls. No, my God works through people. My God works through people. Because the God that I believe in, my soul is a part of that great soul. And every one of us is a part of that great soul. And we're all connected. And that's why I wear this hat, so I can look in your eyes. Because the eyes are the windows to the soul. And if I got that light shining in my face, I can't make the connection that I need. I need that connection with your eyes. I need to look in your soul, and you to look in mine. so that you know that what I'm telling you is what I believe in. It ain't bullshit. It's my truth. My truth that I've found that works for this alcoholic. Because that's all that I can do. That's all I'm doing here, is sharing my experience, strength, and hope with you. I don't come to tell anybody what to do. You do whatever the hell you want to. All the men that I sponsor, I couldn't make you do anything anyway. Nobody can make me do anything. Nobody can make me do a damn thing. All the men I sponsor, I don't tell men what to do. I don't hold any kind of sway over anybody. In all these years that I've sponsored, I don't know how many dozens of men I've sponsored. You think I ever fired one of them? Hell, I wasn't paying them. They may have fired me, but they weren't paying me either. They just went away because they didn't want to hear my experience, strength, and hope. They didn't want to hear about how hard I've had to be on myself. And that's what that means. That means that I'm hard on me. I discipline me, not you. I don't discipline you. It's not my job to discipline you. You know, it's like I heard Bob Anderson say, I pick up stuff from other people over years, and I go, yeah, I understand that. I get that. I heard Bob Anderson say to a group of people, he said, I didn't come here for you. That's not what I'm doing here. I'm here for me. That's what we meant when we talked about this being a selfish program. I got to be real selfish with working this program. That's what I got to be selfish about. We don't hear that too much in meetings anymore either. That doesn't mean that I'm selfish. I won't share my chocolate bar with you. That means I got to be selfish about working this deal. Okay? That's what this selfish program. This selfish program is selfish about learning how to be unselfish. Yeah. AA is a paradox. Has all kinds of paradox stuff, you know. You got to surrender to win. Figured that one out yet? For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. These are the 10-step promises now. And I love the 10-step promises. And we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. It doesn't bother me. I go into bars. I go to the bars with my guys. I buy them drinks. Drinking don't bother me. You know what bothers me? Drunks. They start getting drunk. I'm leaving. I don't want to listen to that crap. I'm in a position of neutrality. And believe me, God has used me in places. I'm in a bar one day having lunch with a business associate. And who do I see come in and sit down at the bar but another brother of the fellowship and buy a drink? And has a drink sitting in front of him, staring at it. Staring at that drink. I told my business associate, who doesn't even know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous, excuse me, I see somebody. I walk up behind him, and as he's reaching for the glass, I put my hand over the glass. And he turns and looks me in the eye. And I say, you don't have to. He said, you're right. He got up and walked out. Now, I don't don't believe in coincidences. That wasn't a coincidence. But I need to keep spiritually fit for God to be able to use me. That's what I do when I turn my life and my will over to the care of God. I got a new employer. I work for him. If I perform his work well, I have everything I need. I've had everything I've needed for the past 33 years. I've always had a roof over my head. I've always had groceries. I've always had some money in my pocket. I've always had people that I care about and that care about me. And I've had this, the greatest thing that could have ever been given to me, this life. Only a sober, recovered alcoholic gets to live two lives. The life that he once lived and the life that he lives now. What other people get to do that? My God, he had a real sense of humor when he put me in that place, you know, for the past almost 30 years now, working for the union. And that's what I do for a living, is fight people. I have to fight for a living. You know what my God had wanted me to learn? He wanted me to learn how to fight the fight without it affecting me. Okay? I was a terrible boxer. I tried to box. My good friend boxed the Golden Gloves. I'd get mad. I'd go crazy. You can't box that way, you know. You can't, because a guy smacks you, you know, kick him in the groin. You can't do that in the boxing ring. They don't, you know. Maybe that's why they started MMA. I don't know, so that they can let you go nuts on each other. But boxing is an art. And that's how I had to learn to be an artist. And knowing how to fight the fight, but be objective. And that did a lot to help me. It helped me. Because I was crazy, man. I used to live with that stuff all the time. It used to drive me nuts. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in a fit spiritual condition. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. That's why, you know, look, that's why, you know, and look, what I do is what I do I need to do for me. That doesn't mean, you know, that I believe that that's what you need to do for you. That's what sharing my experience, strength, and hope is about. Everybody. I was taught this in Alcoholics Anonymous. Everybody needs to make their own program out of this program that works for them. Now, what works for me may not work for you. But all I can share with you is what works for me. That's why all I've done over the years, you know, is steal things from other people. I say, oh, I like that. Oh, I read that. Oh, I heard that. And I make it part of me because it works for me. Works for me to carry a one day at a time medallion in my pocket instead of a 33-year one. Because you know what? In AA, we got no big shots and we got no little shots. One shot and we're all shot. Okay? And I ain't no big shot. I need to keep myself right-sized. I've shared that with you constantly, how I have to keep myself right-sized. That's through the process of a daily inventory. How do I keep myself right-sized? Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise, and this is one of my favorite lines, we can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. Because we're told when we get here that we're self-will run riot. That, you know, our problem is our will. You know, it became like a mantra in the 80s to talk about being powerless over people, places, and things. Every time somebody, you know, in a discussion meeting started sharing about a problem that they had, somebody would raise their hand and say, well, you know, your problem is you're powerless over people, places, and things. Like, that's the pat answer for everything. You're powerless over people, places, and things. You're powerless over people, places. Well, my spiritual sponsor, who I'll talk about next week when we do the 11th step, a great man, he's long dead now. His name was Ed Hearn. He started the first treatment program in Chicago. He was an old man when I met him more than 30 years ago. He was 80. Very quiet. Went to Mass every morning. Irish Catholic like me, I loved him. I've always liked men who were quiet and soft-spoken. Total opposite of me. I've always tried to find a way to be more like them instead of like me. Loudmouth. And he was very quiet. And all of a sudden, I mean, he flipped out in the meeting with these people talking about being powerless over people. He had a big book in front of me. He slammed his hand down on the big book. And he said, show me in that book where it says that your problem is you're powerless over people, places, and things. Because that's not what this book says. What this book says is you want power over people, places, and things. That's what your problem is. Not that you're powerless over them. But you want power over them. You want to think that if I could just manage well, I'd be happy. If everybody just do what I want them to do, life would be wonderful. And we wouldn't have any problems. We practice this inventory. There's a lot more to it than, you know, I mean, damn, I got to do all this stuff about my character? Yeah, that's part of practicing this inventory. That's what it's about. Who wants to help me pass out stuff? Pass these out. There's 200 of them. I don't know if they need that many. And we'll talk about it. This is stuff I got from a website. I don't know if the website's even there anymore. It's called Rose City Recovery. Rose City's in Portland. You know how progressive those people are in Portland. Portland AA. Title, you'll see it. This is the front page. Should I try to live my life on life's terms or on God's terms? Because I know you hear this. You hear this in AA all the time. Well, you got to learn how to live life on life's terms. Well, you know, this same man at 18 years sober, he said to me, you know, I said that. And I'd been saying that for years. You know, you got to learn to live life on life's terms. And this man says to me one day, he goes, well, Tom, what do you think about learning how to live life on God's terms? Damn, 18 years of saying that, all of a sudden went away. And an idea came into my head. You know what? That might be a good idea. The AA textbook recovery program through page 164 is about learning to live life on God's terms, not on ours. Accepting life on life's terms is one person's opinion from a story in the back of the big book. One person's opinion. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. Page 77. Life doesn't make terms. Other people in my ego make terms. So now my choices are other terms, my ego's terms, or God's terms. We cannot change the past, but we can accept, change, or eliminate what needs to be with God's help. So we ask God to direct our thinking and actions. The Serenity Prayer suggests we ask for wisdom to know what can and should be changed. We do not waste energy trying to accept those things that need to be changed. Some of my favorite ones on this sheet are life on life, what are life on life's terms? Letting whatever happens direct or dictate my life. I have to accept and put up with whatever crap or abuse that life dishes out. I guess that's accepting life on life's terms. I'm only human, so I can excuse my bad actions. I'm only human. I want what I want when I want it. That's one of my favorite ones, and I like to throw in there, and I want it my way. If not for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all. I'll hurt you before you hurt me. Oh, that's a good one. Poor me, I'm a victim, so others should pity me and take care of me. That was my thing my whole life. Until a man told me, he said, you know what, Tom, you don't stand much of a chance of change until you get rid of your victim story. Your victim story needs to go. I did blank to please my parents. When in doubt, flip out. Here's one of my favorite ones. Materialism. Success is the accumulation of money and stuff. There you go. Just get more stuff. What's my friend Russell like to say? He likes to say, I bought all kinds of crap to impress other people I didn't even like. He's funny. Everybody lies, everybody cheats, so why can't I? I mean, right? Hey, you're in that business, right? You're in that business where everybody lies and cheats. You got to sell something, man. You know the guys that seem to have the hardest time with this philosophy and this way of life is the guys that work in the car business. They have a terrible time. I've known plenty of guys that work in the car business that try to live the AA way of life. Many guys who have told me they told their manager, I'm not telling those people that. Well, if you're not telling them that, you need to go someplace else and get a job. Or maybe you think it's okay to work in the phone room. Screw a bunch of old people and timeshares and other crap. Or maybe you think it's wise that you be, in the recovery business. Like you see all the people getting busted in Palm Beach County for charging hundreds and hundreds of dollars for a urinal. That's gold, man. That's gold. Anyway, I'm not going to get in. Holding on to my resentments. If someone in my life is in a bad mood, it must be my fault, and I have to try to fix it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm responsible for the way you feel. And why am I responsible for the way you feel? Because I'm dependent on you. I have unhealthy dependencies. I'm dependent on that girl of mine. I'm dependent on my wife. Oh, happy wife, happy life. Hey, if my wife ain't happy, it's her own fault. I'm doing everything I can. Maybe I could do better. I'm trying. Even after 28 years, I'm still trying. Life sucks and then you die. Oh, that's a good one. I turn it over. Life on God's terms. These seem a little bit better to me. God directed after fully surrendering my self-will, practicing spiritual principles in all my affairs. When bad people do bad things, I understand that they choose to do that. God didn't make them do that for some cosmic game to test me or punish me. That's a real good one, huh? God's testing me. That's why this guy screwed me over. Let me tell you something. I heard a lady in a meeting one night say, "You know what? People don't do things to you. People just do things. They're not doing them to me. You see, they're doing it to everybody. But I personalize everything. They're doing it to me. So I'm the guy with the resentment. I'm the guy that's living miserably because all I can do is think about how I'm going to hurt them. You hurt me, I'm going to hurt you. You hurt me, I'm going to hurt you worse." That's what I used to say. I can't, he can, but I think I'll let him. There's the first three steps. I can't, he can, so I think I'll let him. One, two, three. I used to say that constantly in the old days. Don't hear it so much anymore in meetings. I can't, he can, so I think I'll let him. Be willing to live by spiritual principles. I now let God direct my path in life. Only God can love unconditionally. I won't demand it from others. I don't know about you, but I'm not capable of unconditional love. You know, I fail all the time. That doesn't mean I don't stop trying. Yeah, this is about progress. It ain't about perfection. But perfection is the goal. And you know when I'll reach that goal? When they throw the dirt in my face. That's when I'm going to reach that goal. And I'm not going to stop trying until then. I'm never going to be satisfied. It's my principle to not be satisfied with the character that I am. I always need to be working on my character. Because, you know, like my sponsor a long time ago tried to tell me, you know, I used to tell people all the time about this crazy sponsor I had. They used to say, "You need to fire him. He's nuts." I don't see those people anymore. I haven't seen them for years. But I'm still here. And so is that old sponsor. He's back in New York, but he's still there. Still sober. 40-some years he's sober now. And I said, "You know what?" Tommy was his name too. I said, "You know what, Tommy, you expect an awful lot out of me." He said, "Tommy," he said, "all I expect out of you is for you to change your whole effing personality. Because it needs changing." And he's right. And that still applies today. My personality still needs changing. It still needs work. And I keep working on it. I only know that because I inventory myself. If I didn't inventory myself, I would think I'm fine. That's what we mean by keeping in fit spiritual condition. No more lying, cheating, or stealing. Ego is edging God out. Making decisions based on honesty, unselfishness, purity, and love. Let's stop there. Does it see that right there? Let's stop there and let's hand this out. Because I'm running out of time. And I could talk on this for another hour. There's 100 of them there. That's all I got. Oh, here's a few more. I don't know if you got enough. If I don't have enough and you want more, I'll bring more next week. These are the four absolutes. So that you see up there, Guide to Progress, the four absolutes. Bill Wilson didn't like them. They come from the Oxford group. You know why Bill didn't like them? Bill said, "Oh, you can't tell alcoholics that they have to absolutely do anything. It was Dr. Bob who liked them. And I'm kind of a more, that's why this says here, Dr. Bob, the four absolutes. Make decisions based on honesty, unselfishness, purity, and love. These are yardsticks for behavior. At the bottom of this page, you will see, this is my 10th step. It's real simple. This is the 10th step I was taught to answer three simple questions every day. And it's helpful to write it down in a book, in a binder, until you learn to do it automatically. And anytime you're going through any hardship, get back into writing it again. I ask myself these three questions every day. What did I do today that I felt bad about? Because I can't keep doing the same thing day in and day out and feeling bad about it. If I do, I'm liable to drink. I got to do something about it. Did I rise above my feelings today? Remember how I talked about being that union official and learning how to box? That's rising above my feelings. Maybe I wanted to hurt you. I didn't do it because I knew it was not right. It was not the right thing to do. I had to get rid of that justifiable anger. I had to rise above my feelings. I have these feelings. You're not going to get away from them. I'm an alcoholic, and I think like an alcoholic. And my first thoughts are always alcoholic thoughts. And then I have to put the steps into application and apply the steps into my life and rise above it. That's rising above my feelings. And what did I see today that I enjoyed, but I was not a part in creating? That's because I'm not the center of the universe. I need to learn how to have eyes to see the beauty that God creates all around me so that I can have gratitude. Gratitude is essential. I used to have an old sponsor who used to say, an alcoholic that has an attitude of gratitude will never drink. So I have to constantly search for gratitude. First thing I tell you, first thing your sponsor tells you, if you're down in the dumps, you're going around, you're depressed, and you feel like everything's on you, what's he tell you? Make a gratitude list. You think that's just because that's a good idea? You're right, it is. Best idea there is, because you make that gratitude list, all of a sudden you start feeling better. You go out, you help somebody else. Why you do that? To get out of yourself. Because we're stuck in self, and self can't help self to get out of self. We need to take action. Action is the key. So some of the action that I can take is learn to be honest, practice honesty. And there's no relaxed twilight zone. An unrelenting pursuit of the truth is what's important. Ask yourself, is it true or is it false? That's the question to ask yourself. Is it true or is it false? Unselfishness, how's it going to affect the other people? Ask yourself, how's it going to affect the other people? Love, is it ugly or is it beautiful? Love is not a feeling, it's a decision. Real love is what happens after the feeling of love is gone. Love's about giving, not taking or getting. And purity, is it right or is it wrong? Purity of mind, of body, of purpose. True wisdom is thinking with the end in mind. So, I need to close. We need to close. We need to get out of here. They're going to turn the lights off on us. And tomorrow is St. Patrick's Day. And so I'm going to leave you with a little blessing, being the good Irishman that I am. May God sleep on your pillow. May he hold you in the hollow of his hand. May the roads rise up with you, fair weather to your heels. May the wind be ever at your back, and may you be a long time in heaven before the devil knows you're dead. Thanks.
me welcome, thank Tom one more time. And I ask John to come up and do the secretary's report.
Hi, I'm John, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. Hello. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Matt to come up and read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
I'm Matt. I'm an alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
All right, 1940-style big book sponsorship from Ford to second edition Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God is not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I get a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Thank you. And then anyone in need of a sponsor, please raise your hand. All right. Please join us Monday nights for our big book study meeting where the book comes alive. Fellowship starts at 6:30 and the meeting starts at 7:15. It's upstairs on the third floor if you want to join us. We have large print big books and big book dictionaries for sale in the back. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15. We ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Thanks, guys, and see you next week.
Tonight's session and all past speaker podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I listen to them all the time. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night big book study, and those whom wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. Let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, see you all Monday or next Thursday. Godspeed.
Praying, 'cause I'm not old. accumulation. Yeah. These possessions that I have amount to nothing at all. We'll be right back.